So hello and welcome to this episode of the Resilient Farmer podcast. Farming is one of the oldest jobs in the world, and despite its evolution over thousands of years, there is no question that it remains one of the most important. Farming in England is changing again because of Brexit, climate change and other global challenges. This podcast explores how to prepare for the future of farming and how to become resilient to changes in your finances, the environment and your personal life. My name is Manuela de Mendonca, and on the Resilient Farmer podcast this week, I will be speaking to Fraser Hugill about working on Ricardo's Future Farming Resilience programme and receiving the advice himself. So, Fraser, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to just introduce yourself, tell us a bit about your background in farming and the sorts of things that you do now?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Fraser Hugill. I farm down at a place called Helmsley, which is in North Yorkshire, or just outside Helmsley. We have our own family farm, which is 177 acres. And then I farm other land around, including my dad's farm. So in total, we farm about 400 acres. We're a mixed farm with a herd of pedigree beef shorthorns. So I'm director for the Beef Shorthorn Society. So that's sort of one of my passions. So I've been pretty much farming all my life. And alongside that, I am an environmental consultant advisor, and that's sort of my diversification, really.
And you've been involved in this programme, Ricardo's Future Farming Resilience Fund programme, in two different ways. You're delivering it and you've also received the advice, haven't you? Can you just explain how you ended up being in a position where you got to sit on both sides of the table?
Yeah, I've sort of played that poacher gamekeeper position with the programme. I got involved, first of all, very much with my consultancy hat on, asked by the team, the early pilot of the programme actually, to get involved, which was something I was quite excited to do, which was pre-COVID actually, just before COVID, in terms of thinking how this would help my farmer contacts, farmer clients through the agricultural transition, and sort of really, I suppose, recognising the value of that advice to help people I work with, and obviously people much broader than that across North Yorkshire. And we ran the pilot, pretty good uptake. I think there was quite a lot of value around that. Challenges when we were doing that, because COVID hit, I think we'd organised our first meetings. But at the end of that programme, there was a couple of free spaces available still. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to put myself through this. To be honest, I find it really useful as a farmer to sometimes put myself that other side of the table.
Do you want to tell me what it was like having the advice then and the sorts of things that you got out of it?
In terms of the advice, it was a bit strange because it was in COVID, so we had to do it online, which is perhaps me showing my age that I'm still not a big online person. But I found it really useful just to have somebody really analyse my accounts and to pull out where we looked to be weak in terms of performance, but also weak in relation to our spend versus outputs. To be honest, it confirmed a lot of things I knew already. Things like on the arable side, where we've probably made the most changes, we were a fairly high spend farm on variable costs and agronomy versus a fairly average set of outputs in terms of yield. So the two weren't quite matching up, which is where I felt. I think we were sort of aiming for higher output and in effect having higher spend, but very rarely achieving it. We had that eternal optimism of farmers that we're all going to do a massive yield, and the more we spent, the more we'd get out. And that just wasn't happening. It was almost a frustration I had that had been going on for 10 years since I took over the business. And the key thing with that is this year we changed it. It's taken a couple of years before we've done anything about it. Something I'll probably touch on later in this is that these reports aren't just to sit on the shelf and gather dust. And in many ways, I was, for a couple of years, perhaps did that key outcome. But when the opportunity arose to shift our agronomy and move to a more regenerative type of agronomy, we seized it. And I'm not saying it was just because of the report. It was also in terms of where we're going in terms of our environmental ethos. That was the word I was looking for. That report has rung in the back of my mind for 2 years, saying it kept happening every year. It was going to be better. We all do it, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a bit like my skill report. Must try harder, must do better. And then you do the same thing again. And it was happening again and again. I just felt that we weren't getting anywhere, even though I really like my agronomist. And it's not a criticism of them, but I felt that we had to make a fundamental change. Harvest doesn't come yet, so we'll see whether that was right. But I feel we're doing the right thing in farming, and sometimes things have to be your gut as well as just your, the hard facts. So, yeah. And the report, I get backed up with facts.
Was there anything in there that you found surprising?
Yeah, surprisingly interesting. Like, we first of all had to set a few ground rules. Clearly, business advisors don't particularly like suckler cows in a lowland scenario, because you only have to look at the farm business data to show that suckler cows don't make a lot of money. I set the rules early on that that wasn't something that was going to change. I'm a director of the Beef Shorthorn Society, and I said we need to look at what we're doing with those rather than just saying that enterprise is not something going forward. And when we got down to analyze the figures, it was surprising, but pleasing that we were performing very well on that. We were at the higher end of, how should we put it, higher end of a sector that struggles to perform just due to the pure economics. If you're in that sector, you're not going to make lots of money, which didn't tell me anything I didn't know. It's something that I've got a passion for, and perhaps the alternative of rearing dairy calves or B&Bing livestock didn't fit within my overall ethos of what we wanted to do. So, in sort of an important bit of advice, there was be very clear with your advisor what you want to get out of this. We set that ground rule pretty quickly that Joe, that was doing it, Joe, that's not on the cards for debate. Let's look at how it's performing. And then when we got down to that, we were performing really well. And since the report, we're performing even better, not particularly because of the report, just due to we're on a transition of improvement already. If Joe came back and looked at our figures now and our performance and our output, it's got to where we were intending it to go in the last couple of years since we did it. So that was positive, but there were some important lessons to take from that as well.
You knew Joe before, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I'd been working with Joe for 6 months on the project, doing online stuff. I don't think I've ever got to meet the guy, actually. We've been working for about 3 years now. It's the depressing thing about our online lives, isn't it? So, but we had, and I think that is important in some ways, having the confidence with that advisor to say no. I'm used to working with advisors and taking advice and giving it, and I have a certain attitude towards it, which is positive. I have an attitude, there's no such thing as a stupid question. And I am quite happy to be challenged. And I think that's important. But if I'm challenged, I'm quite happy to give the kickback against it as well. And I think it's very important that when we take advice, we do that, because otherwise you let the advisor run down a rabbit hole, which I could have done with that. He could have spent a load of time coming up with alternative enterprises, which would have, A, been a waste of his time, B, probably disenfranchised me with the process, and the report would have gone on the shelf, and I would have said what a waste of time that was.
Have you got any advice for people then, based on the fact that you've also been an advisor yourself and also been delivering this program as well? Because it must be quite a different experience having had both of those things.
I suppose I've got 25 years of delivering environmental advice. And I think when you're delivering advice, there's some sort of basics that kick in to play. And what I would say when I'm sat putting my farmer cap on is that know why you want the advice. Be very clear about why you want the advice. What are your objectives? Sit down, right? I've got Fraser coming today. What do I want to know from him? What do I want to be clear about when he leaves my farm or drops off the web call or whatever we do nowadays? So I think that's really important, and particularly when it's free advice, because I think there's a real danger with free advice that you don't value it, and it shouldn't really make any difference if you're paying, I won't say a fee, but whatever you're paying for it shouldn't really make any difference, because at the end of the day, you're giving your time up to take that advice as well. So don't have it as a wasted afternoon or a wasted morning. Be very clear what you want, and value it and embrace the process. I mean, that's the sort of next sort of bullet, but really embrace what you're doing. Some of the stuff I've said, open mind, clarity about what you want, put your cards on the table. Don't try to hide anything. I know sometimes when I speak to people about this program, oh, I've got to give my accounts up. Well, you've got to let somebody look at your accounts. There's nothing to hide in there. It's not as though you're putting them up at a public meeting. At the end of the day, if you're not prepared to show that advisor your accounts and yeah, give them warts of all of your business. What's the point? You're going to get bad advice. And if your business is perfect, which none will be, but if it is, you probably don't need the advice anyway. I've been very clear that I want people to take the advice that really, really need it. And then when you get that advice back, analyze it and consider what's good for you. I think go through it. I think advice shouldn't be an end point. It should be just part of a transition of the business. So really look at it. One good thing with our program is it's not a come visit, get a report, never speak to the person again. We've got some transition in it. So it's taking you on a, sorry, it sounds a bit naff, but taking you on a journey and helping you on that journey. It's not us. We're not driving the bus. You as the farmer's driving the bus. We're there to help you. We're the sat-nav, I suppose you could put it, couldn't you? To help you go in the direction that you've put in, that you want to go. You've really got to embrace this whole process. The other thing I do think with advice, and when you get the report back and stuff, is there'll be some stuff in there you think is good, and there'll be stuff in there that you might think is rubbish. Analyse it. Really try and draw out what are the key points yourself, and some of it you can ignore.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with ignoring it, just as long as you're clear about why you're ignoring it. Sometimes that process in your mind of thinking, I don't like that, and then thinking, why don't I like it, is actually invaluable. It's as much about you as the individual going through those processes as it is the advisor. And the advisor's not going to give you an answer that will sort out your business. It's going to be you that'll do it, and it's giving you the skills to do it.
It's all really interesting stuff as well, and really, really interesting insights. Can you kind of sum up, I suppose, if you had to tell someone exactly how to not approach free advice, what are the headline takeaways?
Well, first of all, it's free, so I might as well have it. That's a really bad start. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's not going to cost me anything. I'll just have that advice. Not good. Not good. You're on a bad footing to start with, because even then it's not free. First of all, that's telling me you don't actually value your own time and your own mental time to go through the process. Something I've said already, not being clear to the advisor of what you want out of it, not embracing the process. Again, sort of an expectation that this mythical advisor is going to come in and sort out your business. They're not. It's sort of expectation management, I suppose, is where I'm going with that one. And then when you get it, just shoving it on the shelf and ignoring it. Dusty shelf syndrome. Report comes, sits there. My report sat there, but the advice within it is in my head. And like I said, it's been slowly acted upon. And I've waved it around at a few farm walks we've done on the farm as well, in terms of the importance of sort of building farm resilience. So, yeah.
And just coming back to the word resilience, we talk about that a lot with this program because it's the Future Farming Resilience Fund. What exactly do you think that word means? Because it is a bit of a buzzword, and I think it's got a different meaning for everybody, and I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that.
You're right there to mention it different for everybody, because it should be. Hopefully, with what I've said already, it's about this, it's making it personal to you. Again, I've been around a bit, and we used to talk about, gosh, in the early 2000s, integrated rural development, and it was all about the three-legged stool: financial, social, and environmental. And I think that still stacks up in terms of, if you look at resilience, it's all three. So as farmers, you know, we'll directly go to the financial resilience. Big part of our program is that, with the guys from Andersons. And in some ways, putting my advisor hat on, I sometimes feel I'm pulling them guys in a little bit, because they're quite financially focused. And I did with my own report, and they were probably very financially focused, whereas I'm a bit more rounded in what I'm trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. But I do say, with the financial, when I've done farm walks on the farm and you get a lot of farmers here, I'll take financial hits on things because I'm looking at environmental and social as well. But maybe I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that. I have the don't go bust objective. That's a sort of underlying one, because you can't do the others if you go bust. So
very logical.
It's a sort of basic, isn't it? It's a bit like life, really. You can have a bloody good time, but if you can't afford to pay for it, you're on a down at hiding to nothing. The social thing, I think, is really important. And again, if we look at the program, we've got FCN involved with it. Again, as farmers, I think we view when FCN gets involved, something's done really wrong. I think the social is much broader than that, in terms of everybody needs to be thinking about, what are they doing? Why are they doing what they're doing? Are they enjoying what they're doing? again, there can be sometimes a bit of a kickback to farming's a way of life and that, and again, it can go too far the other way. But at the end of the day, if I looked at my business, probably the best thing I could do financially would be to stop farming. But I think of the assets I've got tied up, but that doesn't meet my social and environmental objectives to do that. So it's about the balance across the three. And I think the day I stop enjoying what I'm doing, that'll probably determine when I give up farming because I don't enjoy it anymore, or I make some really fundamental changes, perhaps. That would probably drive change as much, if not more, than the financials. Financials are probably forced change. Social will probably instigate change. And then the environmental stuff, again, I'm probably very focused on that because I've worked in the sector for 25 years. And the environmental has become more and more important to me, linking back probably to the social. Why am I farming? What do I enjoy out of farming? I had a botany group round yesterday. That's part of feeling good about what we do. But fundamentally, I think a lot of the environmental stuff now, more and more, and a lot of the advice I'm giving is more of thinking of how does the environment function in terms of how you farm. So soil health has become a massive part of what we do with our business. Our agronomy has gone in that direction in terms of being much more nutrient focused rather than chemically focused. And I think we're seeing a real fundamental change within the sector in terms of how environment is viewed. To be a good farmer, we have to be environmental farmers. And to be a successful farmer, we really need to think about the environmental assets on our farm and not be degrading them, particularly soil, but also in terms of when we look at the wider environment from pollinators. And I had probably the first experience this year of panicking that with the weather conditions and we had winter beans, were we actually going to have enough pollinators to ensure a pod set, which we did. I probably won't look to Twitter too much to start worrying about did we have enough pollinators, but the fact that was circulating, that farmers were saying we didn't seem to have the insect activity, was negative, but you could say it was positive because we were starting to think about that as well. Just having functioning systems, but also thinking about what we do and the image of what we do. Big part of it, like I say, is being happy to have a botany group around the farm for people in the local village to be aware that we're doing good things for the environment. And fundamentally, at a national scale, farming have an image that people want to buy stuff with a British flag stuck on it and they view that as a positive, not a negative. And I think that's really important for the industry as a whole.
It sounds like you think there's a lot of opportunities there in the environmental and those social pillars of the stool.
Yeah, I do. I think the social is fundamental to it. I think that's why we've got still got so many people that want to farm. I think there's some real challenges around that, actually, in terms of how the industry is going to restructure. And I sort of look around the area we live, and I think there's almost, in terms of the amount of land and the amount of fixed costs, that I worry that there's actually, I don't mean this in a negative way, but there's almost too many people want to farm, and we're all chasing the same land to do it. And we end up actually damaging our financials because we're not actually making good business decisions because we're so desperate to farm. And I think that's a real challenge in how we do that. And it shouldn't be viewed as a negative because it's great that people are wanting to farm. And I certainly don't mean it as that, but I think there's some real challenges there. I think the environmental is in many ways exciting. I'll be at Groundswell next week and it's become, I think it is the biggest sort of agricultural event now, or certainly sort of dedicated agricultural event. Obviously some of the big shows will be bigger, but and there's what, 5,000, 6,000 people there last year looking at the types of systems we are around conservation farming, regenerative farming, whatever you think of that, and really challenging themselves, looking at systems change, but being driven by not just the schemes, but by how their farm system works as a whole. That's how my job's changed. It used to be about I can get you this scheme, I can get you this money to do this, and or not to do this usually. It used to be for not to do this. Whereas now we're sort of almost turning it round and saying, well, if you take up this option, it'll help you deal with this issue. This will help you reduce your input costs. This is how it might impact on your fixed costs. And that's where our program, sort of trying to link environment, business, can work across the whole, really, in terms of environment's a key part of that.
One final question then. If anyone's listening to this who's maybe considering signing up for the programme, what would you say to them?
I'd say think about what you want, think about what you want to achieve, look at the program and what it can deliver, be clear about what you want out of it, and make sure, and I do say this, I'm sort of non-partisan in terms of make sure this is the right program for you. I think we've got a really good program because you can get some in-depth advice over a period of time and you link environmental and financial, and I would hope as advisors we have a bit of social as well, and we think about that. And I think it's a really good offer, and that's why I work on it, and I recommend most of my clients. There's some I have actually sent in other directions because I felt another program was better. I don't have a problem with that. I just think people need to take the time to pick what's right for them and think what's right for them.
It's really good, honest advice. Thanks very much for all of that. I think really, really great nuggets of information in there, and I hope people find it helpful. And if people do want advice, they'll get that fairly soon, and then they'll be able to come back for additional support over the next few years, won't they?
That's right, yeah. Well, 2-year programme, we're a bit into it now, aren't we? But yeah, it's over a period of time, and I'm finding with quite a few of the people I've done with, we've actually done the initial advice, but we haven't written the report yet because we're waiting for more information to come out to sort of try and finalise it. I don't want to create dusty reports, and I'm finding that I've got people sort of emailing me and ringing me just saying, what about this? What, you know, we're thinking of going into SFI. Is there any pitfalls? I've had that come in, and just trying to, like I say, be that sat nav that helps them through the transition period, really, which is not going to be easy.
Good luck to everybody. And yeah, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Manuela.
The Future Farming podcast will be back next month. In the meantime, you can find out more about workshops near you, our next webinar, and the Resilience Toolbox at ffrf.ricardo.com. This podcast is produced by Ricardo, edited by Woods Noble Video, and funded by DEFRA. Thank you for listening.